like a graduate police constable, an eye was kept on him. With a father who was a banker and a mother who was a professional musician, his masters were never quite sure which set of genes was going to prove prepotent. And there were not all that many members of SIS who could mingle with undergraduates without changing their appearance. It had been remarked, not necessarily with disapproval, that Mackay seemed to be seen with a whole series of pretty girls, and it was put down to his charm. Even his male contemporaries agreed that Mackay had charm. And what they liked even more was that he seemed totally unaware of this attribute. He was as charming to men as he was to women. In a trade where cynicism and ruthlessness predominated, Mackay had proved exceptionally successful. A critical senior had once commented that a Mackay interrogation was more like old friends comparing notes than Her Majesty's Secret Intelligence Service pursuing the Queen's enemies. But Mackay got results, and that was what counted. It was nearly an hour later when he woke, and as he stood up, he slid his arms into his jacket and shuffled through to the next room. It was empty, reeking of cigarette smoke, and with the bare bulb still alight as it hung from the ceiling. The copy of Time was still there, and he leafed through the first few pages to find the photograph. It was on here, under the headline, "Gallup and Harris Say It's Powell." He sat down in the chair, shivering slightly from the cold. There were eight people in the photograph, all smiling into the camera, and the caption read, "With a 19% lead in the polls, candidate Logan Powell and campaign manager Andrew Dempsey return to Hartford for the final days of the campaign." He bent forward and switched on the electric fire. If you saw a face in a magazine, you assumed you recognized it, because it was well-known and familiar, a film star or some public figure. But that wasn't why the photograph had stayed in his mind. He remembered Dempsey now. It had been in Paris, May 1968, and the song had said it was the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. But China had exploded her first atom bomb, France her first hydrogen bomb, and the North Koreans had captured the first U.S. Navy ship to be taken since 1807. And on the streets of Paris, the students were demonstrating against the government. That was where he had last seen Andy Dempsey, with bright red blood soaking his white shirt from a broken nose as they slung him into the black van. After the taunting shouts, they had thrown cobbles from the streets at the police, before the SDECE, with the black crosses on their white helmets, came in. It was they who had beaten up Dempsey and his girl as the barriers came down. Her mouth had been wide open as she screamed, as the thug twisted her breast and kneed her groin. Then he had lost sight of her as she fell to the ground in the forest of feet and legs. Dempsey was an American, and his girl was a Russian or a Pole, he couldn't remember which. That was the last time he had seen them. He'd been withdrawn to London just afterwards. It had been one of his first jobs for SIS, a low-profile penetration of student groups in Paris, and Dempsey had been on his list as a member of the Communist Party and intimately involved with a Soviet citizen. His reports would still be on file. He switched off the fire and went back to bed. It was midday before he had time to go to Central Records. He sat in front of the microfilm reader for over an hour. There was more than he remembered. Apart from the typed reports, there had been a handful of photographs and several pages of notes in his own handwriting. The round, careful script looked naive and juvenile now. He had forgotten about Kleppy. He walked back to the house in Bessborough Street. It was one of those rambling turn-of-the-century houses that wealthy merchants built for themselves when cotton was still king, but Manchester was beginning to lose the fight to London as the centre of trade. Now it was the operational base of one of those special units that were spawned from time to time by SIS, highest security, but liable to be disbanded at any time. The present incumbents were designated as SF-14. Special Force 14 were responsible for planning and mounting deep penetration operations into the intelligence services of the Soviet bloc. Mackay was one of its two operational directors. He slid his card into the slot, and the door chunked open. The field security sergeant at the small desk had known him for 3 years, but, as always, they went through all the routine of passwords and identity checks. Someday, somebody was going to renege.